League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 31st of January, 2020. On the podcast today, Cathal Friel, Executive Chairman of Open Orphan, discusses what the £5.3 million they've raised at a premium will be used for. Also on the podcast, Jacqueline Danielle, CEO of Education, talks about the new appointment of Dr. Sarah De Freitas as Executive Director of Education. Also, Andy Hollingworth, CEO of Tuple, discusses their final results and the proposed acquisition of DMSL, a business which acts as a BT Premier reseller in the B2B market. Plus, Andrew Knott, CEO of Savannah Petroleum, covers the addition of a new customer to AccuGas and the significance it will make to the business. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Tired of using different sites to research companies? Vox Markets aggregates key financial details, pricing data, and company news into one place. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Cathal Friel, Executive Chairman of Open Orphan. That's ORPH ticker. Cathal, thanks for joining me.
Justin, good morning. It's a pleasure to talk.
Yes, and I've got to say, you are a man of your word. And, you know, you've said you've had plans since we started talking back at the end of summer last year, I suppose. And you said you're going to do this and that, and you've been doing it, and including a placing done at a premium, which, you know, you don't see very often these days.
Justin, yeah, look, we're trying to do it Open Orphan, being honest. We're putting our money where our mouth is. We're backing it with a substantial amount of personal investment, myself being one of the larger investors this time round. But no, look, it's exciting. If you push very hard, you can get things done. And we're really excited to announce today that we raised £5.3 million, predominantly all from institutions, lots of new institutions coming in. But to be fair to our private clients, we have a really good following. We made it public in the market. So anybody, we also made it public, we were going to do it around 6.1, 6.2, 6.3. Mm-hmm. So the public could buy. So this wasn't a share deal that Joe Public said, oh, why did you not include us? We publicized it. So rather than going for this big, mad open offering, they could go in and buy in the market. So yeah, really happy. Small premium. We thought we'd be fair. We'd do it at a closing price, a tiny premium. New investors' money. And really excited. We've now got the facility to make sure the enlarged Open Orphan Group will be profitable in the coming months. No more losses. HVivo was horrendously loss-making. I've slashed all losses out of Open Orphan van business, and the team in HVivo have done likewise. 11 million taken out of the annual cost base. So looking forward to profits in the weeks and months ahead.
Well, that's it. This gives you now a runway to get to that profitability you've been talking about. So just explain what you're hoping to use the money for then, Cathal.
Small bit of it to get rid of, let's say, the last bit of rationalization to make sure we're profitable. That's one. Two, HVivo have an 80 million, we've guided this last, an 80 million pipeline of orders they're chasing. They need to have a bit of a cash balance, 3 or 4 million on their balance sheet, to reassure those customers to sign the contracts and move ahead. So it's really reassurance to convert those large HVivo. And one would expect, the management team have been guiding, watch that space in the coming days and weeks ahead. There has been a backlog of orders in the HVivo system. And as their share price collapsed last year by 90% and their money ran out, who would have signed contracts? Now, it's safety in the hands in the merged company, and we're expecting, and we believe, we'll be start delivering orders. And as soon as they happen, these are orders and contracts, 3 to 5 million, in the coming days and weeks ahead. We'll watch that space.
Yeah, yeah. And at the moment, we're right in the middle of this, you know, coronavirus epidemic, and there's no knowing, you know, I mean, at the moment, you know, fatalities are still picking up. But it's, like I said, HVivo is in that space, isn't it? So it's, I mean, it's awful to say it, but the timing-wise here is quite good, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, Justin, it's terrible to say, but sometimes there's an ill wind that blows no good. The original founder of HBFO is Professor John Oxford. He's known as a world-renowned expert on the coronavirus. And he was on the BBC Today programme on Wednesday morning, talking at length about it. And he's saying our 24-bed quarantine clinic in Whitechapel in East London and the on-site virology laboratory is one of the few places in Europe that can now help treat seriously ill coronavirus patients. And furthermore, John has said virology and vaccine service has been a little bit of a boring thing in recent years, but boy, are we lucky. The timing just could not be better. We've asked John not to mention her name during this last couple of days when he was on the TV programmes because we didn't want to spike our share price. But we will unleash John next week and he's free to talk all about Open Orphan being now one of the world leaders in providing services, this whole vaccine and virology business.
Yeah, well, I mean, it just goes to show that constant investment in this area is needed, isn't it, really?
Exactly, yeah. Look, vaccines and virology has been an elected child. HVivo, John set it up in 89, standalone company in 92, provided really profitable challenge study services. Hasn't been that exciting, but boy, is suddenly challenge studies, virologies, vaccines on everybody's lip as we speak. So look, you get lucky, and I think genuinely Open Orphan shareholders, one of the biggest ones myself, remain locked up for another 3 years, but we're right in the eye of that excitement as we speak.
Yeah. And what's your thoughts now? I mean, you know, when you first came on, you initially said an exit would be probably 2-3 years on the line, and then you were bringing it forward, but I sense now you feel like you've got a business here that can really grow. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, look, just the issue is people get sick of management teams falling in love with the companies, paying them salaries. Mm-hmm. Look, we've made it very clear. We want to build a serious company. And one of the big options is if you get it profitable and grow it, that's sellable. So look, as soon as we get it profitable, all options be looked at. We still have designs on generating very substantial shareholder returns in a short period of time. That may be an exit before Christmas. But one thing for sure, we're going to continue building now on this platform. We don't need to do any more fundraisings, so that's done for this year. We don't need to do any more acquisitions, other than maybe a tiny little bolt-on when we're eyeing up, very small. But the design that would be make sure we can publicize this company when it's substantially profitable, make sure we convert that 80 million pipeline, and let's be honest, let's provide the virology vaccines services, not products, services, to what now looks like a very excitable and growing market for these services.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, well, Kyle, as always, three reasons. In summary, if someone's liking the sound of what you're doing here, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should add you to their watch list, please.
Absolutely, Justin. I think the first line of our RNS today tells you one of the reasons we backed, again, written large checks. I've underwrit this deal to the tune of $2.5 million as a personal investment. I put $300,000 in fresh equity on the table. So Open Orphan is one of the most heavily backed management team companies on AIM. Second one, we said we'd grow fast. We're there. We're now 30 million revenues and we're less than 6 or 9 months old. And the third one, we're lucky, but being honest, picking up a virology vaccine business that's very synergistic. You couldn't write a book about it. It's just sometimes you get lucky.
Marvellous stuff. Kyle, good to chat to you, and no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Justin, as always, thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jacqueline Danielle, CEO of Way Education, and that's W-E-Y ticker. Jacqueline, thanks for joining me.
Good to talk to you again.
Yes, 2020, and you've started off the year, you've had your AGM, but also you've appointed a Dr. Sara De Freitas, and we'll get into that in a bit as an executive director, and there's some interesting comments from Barry, the chairman, as well. And I have looked at her sort of her track record and her history online. It's very interesting, actually, what she's up to. But before we get into all that, Jacqueline, for people maybe not familiar or never heard of Way Education, can you summarise what it's all about, please?
Yeah, sure. So Way is an online education group, and we operate two brands, Inter High School and Academy 21. Inter High School is essentially an independent school on the internet, so it comprises of a junior school, a secondary school, and a sixth form, and it's a full school experience. So students log in and they've got classes, lessons, a very wide curriculum of not just core subjects, but additional subjects. They have tutor groups, homework, exams, guest speakers, and a whole social area. So a complete school. Mm-hmm. It was principally designed for private pupils, usually placed by their parents, so what we call our B2C community. But we now also support sports academies and drama academies and international schools and the like with their academic offering. So that's our B2B community. Academy 21 is where we offer alternative provision. So UK state schools, local authorities and other education providers, we offer them, we focus on core academic subjects, that's what alternative provision is, where there are children who may need catch-up courses or help with gaining some GCSEs or gaining some grades or making some progress. They might have suffered from long-term absence, maybe health issues, behavioural issues, and often the objective of that alternative provision is to integrate them back into their school or at least get them some educational outcomes.
Excellent stuff, marvellous, and it's very much a growing area, isn't it? You know, online education.
Absolutely, yes. It's grown internationally, but it's grown significantly in the UK, which is why the government are looking at this now, and the Department for Education, you know, have got plans for a voluntary registration scheme. But I've talked about that before.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's talk about the news you released this week, and it's the appointment of an executive director, Dr. Sarah De Freitas. Now, take us into that and take us why, and of course, you've got an excellent track record, but take us through the history of that appointment, if you could.
Okay. Well, at the end of last year, we turned our attention to our strategy for online provision going forward. So we wanted to secure the leading developments in education and all the benefits that those could bring to our organisation. I mean, there's been a lot of research globally on delivering education and how pupils learn. And I often say to people, it's, you know, for us, it's not just a case of taking the traditional classroom and everything we know about that and plonking it online. Mm-hmm. That's not enough. Learners do learn in different ways. The technology is emerging. We have to have a model that's going to suit that generation going forward. And as part of the implementation of that strategy, looking to the future, we created this new position, Director of Education. And we're very pleased to have appointed Sarah. She's already contributing to the delivery of our continuous innovation in online education because she's got a wealth of experience, both in the higher and secondary space globally, as a practitioner, as well as being a researcher on how learning, new learning is approached and how the tools are characterized, mm-hmm. not just in computer-generated environments, but how the roles of a pupil and a teacher or a leader and a learner are evolving because of those computer-generated environments, not just a physical classroom. So we're very pleased to have appointed her, and she will help the team adapt to rapid growth, and she's looking at a very scalable education model. And she's there really to support and grow Way's community of excellence in the teaching and our very student-focused approach. So don't forget, we're always looking to use the technology for the benefit of the individual student. And that's very important because that's what can't happen to a great extent in a physical classroom. It's just not possible. But obviously with technology, that's where we can really start to tackle that.
Yeah, and it's worth looking her up, isn't it? Because I looked her up on the internet there and videos, and she does present a lot, doesn't she? Conferences and stuff, and she's quite a good speaker on that.
Yes, and obviously she's, you know, had a lot published on this. She's a lot of research, a lot of evidence. She's aware of a lot of models globally of what other people are doing, what has worked well, what has worked not so well. So we're able to pick and choose from all that and put something together that's quite unique to Way.
Yeah, do you know what? I like the fact you're focusing on technology, because that is the advantage, isn't it, of being online. Like you say, it's, you know, having just putting the classroom, you know, online is not it. It's not the point of doing that. There's no advantage there. But having technology, you know, and trying to advance that side of it, and via any way, via gamification or any other way you can. And interesting to see what Barry said here. You've got to sort of grow the company, and he says, not just through marketing, but by an ever-improving, individual-focused, immersive and rewarding platform. And that really is the way forward, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. I mean, last year, because of a certain amount of uncertainty, if you like, we focused and we stabilised the company and we focused. And yes, we delivered growth. But this year, it's really for us about accelerated growth. And how are we going to deliver that? We deliver that by actually looking at our service, looking at our education model, and the technology for delivering that model, and the technology for the content of that education. So it's hugely important. And then once we've got that right, so once we've got our service right, we can then go and market that offering to help penetrate new markets and take our share of the growing market. But it's not going to be enough to put something that is very traditional online. That doesn't help anybody. This is a, you know, we're trying to lead the way in this education revolution, and that means getting it right, and that means thinking very carefully about the quality of the content, the quality of the delivery, how we're delivering, what the student experience is like.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've mentioned the immersive, so I suppose there's a bit of AR, maybe a bit of VR. And you also previously mentioned AI as well.
Yes, although we don't really believe in artificial intelligence. We tend to call it technology for the use of the learner, just because at the moment it's a widely used term, and there's no such thing, really. It's just advanced technology. But most people will have heard of adaptive learning, where students, you know, in gamification and taking all of those elements of digital learning and putting them into our education model.
Yeah, yeah. And very much what, at the moment, you are obviously focused on this and gaining this kind of technology just to enable the growth of Way. Is that the case?
Well, yeah, because it improves our offering. Obviously, if we can have, if the student experience is the best that it possibly can be, and, you know, we've been at this a long time now. This is our 15th academic year or 16th academic year. And where we started was leading the way. You know, we had online platform with students collaborating with the teacher online. We've come a long way since then. The technology has come a long way since then. Back in that day, you know, quite a few of our students were still on a dial-up connection. Obviously, that's a long time ago in technology terms. Mm. And so the involvement of delivering that education has to evolve at that pace. So it's not just about plain old teacher, pupil, here's the content, you know, what do you understand about this? Tick, cross, yes, you've done very well. It's more about, you know, looking at that content, unpicking it, experiencing it for real, exploring it, having students lead the way themselves. So there's a whole new education model that can still deliver those fantastic outcomes. So they can achieve their exam results, they can achieve their learning progress, and really make a success of it. Like I say, sort of revolutionary in education, really.
Yeah, yeah. And so from, you know, an investor listening to this now, I mean, and you being a CEO, what's your ambition for Way then, Jackie?
Well, I think it's just leading the way in this education revolution. We're the number one, but to stay the number one, we can't stand still. We have to keep improving things. We have to keep being innovative, not just for the sake of it, but for the sake of the pupils and what they're achieving. So we have focus groups with students, we have focus groups with parents, we have focus groups with educationalists. And by doing that and continually improving our service and looking at the quality of that delivery, we can continue to lead the way for the next decade.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Jackie, as always, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing, the progress you're making its way, but are not yet following the story, just give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay. Well, I say three different things every time, and that's because there are so many reasons. So my three for today, I think it's not often that you get the opportunity to be part of something so important. Education is so important for young people and the impact that it's going to have on their lives. So for your followers to be part of that is immense, and that's one reason. They can really have some part in the future success and happiness of the younger generation. Mm-hmm. Number two, we've got a very clear business model. We're cash generative and we're making inward investment to deliver our future financial advantage. Quite important. And thirdly, I'd say it's a very exciting time for Way. We're building further on our very solid reputation, both in our B2C and our B2B. And we're growing both entities at quite a pace. And like I said, we're leading the education revolution.
Excellent stuff, Jackie. Good to chat to you. And I should add, as always, because as an investor, when I look at different companies researching them, I always like to see the management with skin in the game. And you do have that, so that's reassuring to other investors. But it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andy Hollingworth, CEO at Tuple, T-O-O-P. It's ticker there. Andy, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin.
Yeah, it's been a busy old couple of days, weeks maybe, and maybe even months at Tuple HQ, because you've had some releases out today, final results for the year, and a placing, and an acquisition. So we'll dig into that. But as always, Andy, for people not familiar with Tuple, can you just explain the business for them, please?
Yeah, certainly. Tuple are a dedicated telecoms provider in the small business market, supplying small business connectivity with telecom solutions at a always fixed price for the duration of the contract, with transparent and seamless billing. So customers know where they are and know exactly what they're paying for the whole duration of their contract, all backed up by our own software platform, which chooses the best carriers for the best location of the customer.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's dig into some of the highlights from the final results before we get into the acquisition. So take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Andy.
Yeah, certainly will. Revenue, we are reporting the year-on-year growth was over 80%, up to 2.4 million. Underlying, actually, it was more than 80%, because you'll see from also the highlights that we deliberately sacrificed about £600,000 worth of revenue in year, which was a considered decision based on low-margin wholesale revenue that was gained prior to, obviously, entry into the market. Mm. So 80% in terms of actualized revenue growth, very good. Our core products in itself, you know, the broadband revenue grew by 220%. The cloud-based telephony revenue grew by 80%, and the mobile revenue grew by 200%. So obviously, with the significant customer growth that we've going on, that drives obviously the revenue growth on all the key areas. Importantly, obviously, the gross profit grew by 165%. So from last year's figure of 180,000 gross profit, we've gone up to just short of £500,000 overall gross profit. And obviously, within year, we were able to take ourselves out of a debt position and make ourselves debt-free with the private placing that was successfully completed. And obviously, we were able to be able to repay the 600,000 debt for only £150,000, so sort of less than 25p in the pound. Mm-hmm. So I think a strong year that has led nicely on to obviously the rest of the results that we've and news that we've released this morning.
Yeah, so the proposed acquisition of DMS. So take us through who's DMS, and we'll discuss why afterwards. But take us through this acquisition, if you could.
Yeah, DMSL are a very, very similar company to Tuple, based in Bishop Stortford in Hertfordshire, been established since 2002, dedicated into the small business and medium-sized business market, have been one of BT's longest-serving premier resellers, and they are responsible for over 250,000 BT customers, who have between them approaching 500,000 revenue generating units. Their job on behalf of BT is to manage that customer base, cross-sell and upsell to that customer base, and obviously recontract that customer base, of which they get remuneration from BT for doing that. Additionally, they are well ahead as specialists in the cloud-based VoIP telephony market, and they also build their own cloud-based telephony estate, signing customers up on cloud-based telephony on a monthly basis. They have typically 20 staff in the UK in Bishop Stortford, and significantly they have over 30 staff in Durban, contracted to exactly the same company that Tuple have recently contracted themselves to in Durban as well. So a very, very complementary business to Tuple. Two significant ways and different ways of trading, where obviously Tuple invest in the customer up front for long-term profit, and it takes about 8 to 10 months for that customer to come into profit in the life of its contract, whereas with DMSL trade on 90% of their business with BT, where they literally convert customers into cash immediately for upfront commissions. So quite interesting in terms of the complements of business and how the businesses will complement each other going forwards.
Yeah. Let's see. They have up to the 30th of April 2019, turnover 3.1 million and a profit before tax of over 330,000.
Absolutely. They've always been a profitable business. And when you're looking at M&A, with all of the M&As that I've been involved in my previous roles in the industry, you're really looking for an acquisition rationale that ticks three boxes. You never really find it. You find two out of the three, or one significant out of the three. But, you know, the three things that you're looking for is you're looking for number one, scale. Number two, synergies. You know, what synergies are there between the companies? And number three, skill set. With the DMSL acquisition, that ticks all three synergies. And flow that through, it basically means from day one of the completion, it is earnings enhancing from day one as the combined business. It materially reduces the overall time to monthly profit for the Tuple business, and it significantly reduces the time to positive cash generation. I think then when you put on top of that the overall consideration that we've been able to agree with the sellers, a low upfront payment, you know, with a good size element of equity and paper, locked in for 3 years, and a seller that has the same passions and shares the same strategy and vision as us, that has locked himself in for, you know, on a service contract for 3 years, and agreed to a deferred payment based on performance 3 years down the road. It all complements the business very well. It de-risks the Tuple business from any kind of future age debt, because we can now make decisions in terms of what customers sit where. And as I say, it's earning enhancements from day one.
Yeah. And so from 12 months from now, where do you see Tuple?
From 12 months from now, obviously, we will. I would see Tuple 12 months from now, obviously, significantly more scale in terms of revenue, becoming a profitable business and becoming a cash generative business through the combination of the two businesses and the synergies that we will realise between the two businesses. We've already made a statement that the synergies that these two businesses create is in excess of a £50,000 saving a month at day one. And we've got the increased skill set and the high margin capability of the DMSL business in its cloud and VoIP-based sales.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, marvellous. Andy, well, as always, you know the score here. If someone's listening right now, likes the sound of the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add Tuple to their watch list, please.
Yeah, number one, we're a growth business in a growth sector, especially with the legislative changes that are coming from Ofcom in changing copper to fibre. There's going to be huge, significant growth in high-speed data and broadband. Number two, today we have launched an acquisition that is transformational for the company. As I say, remind everybody that it's earnings enhancing from day one. And I think number three, what we're demonstrating here is a leadership team that has strong sector experience, but obviously strong experience in organic growth. But also, obviously, what we've demonstrated this morning is significant experience in M&A growth with the right structured kind of deal.
Marvellous stuff. Andy, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be chatting in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Look forward to it, Justin. Thank you very much for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Knott, CEO of Savannah Petroleum, SAVP is ticker there. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Justin. Good morning.
Good morning. I don't know where you are, but I guess it's better weather than back here. At the moment, it's just wet and cold. That's the sum of it.
Well, I'm in sunny Lagos, so it's very, very nice and pleasant, actually.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, listen, you've released a significant bit of news, addition of new customer to AccuGas, and we'll delve into that and explain what it's all about in a bit. Before we do, as always, Andrew, if someone is tuning in, maybe the first time or the first time I heard you on the podcast, can you just summarise Savannah Petroleum for them, please?
Yeah, Savannah is an AIM-listed oil and gas company. We're active in two countries, Nigeria and Niger. In Nigeria, we are the majority owner of the largest gas transportation and distribution business in sub-Saharan Africa called AccuGas. And we also have interest in two world-scale oil and gas fields called Ukwo and Stub Creek, both of which are in production today. And then in Niger, we have a world-class exploration, appraisal and development project in the southeast of the country, where we have about 50% of the main petroleum basin under license. And that's quite an exciting project because next door there's what we believe to be an $8 billion infrastructure and development project being sanctioned by the CNPC, which is the company that operates immediately next to us. So we have two large, important projects, which is the oil and gas projects that we have in Nigeria, and then the oil project that we have in Niger, both of which we expect to undergo very significant growth over the coming months and years.
Yeah, yeah, and this bit of news here will play into that growth, I suspect. So, first of all, take us through this bit
very
of news,
so.
and then we'll take us through this bit of news, and then we'll discuss the significance of the news. So, first of all, the addition of a new customer. Take us through that, if you could, Andrew.
Well, look, it's very exciting for us as a business. This is the first time that AccuGas has signed a new customer in almost 5 years. And what we've announced this morning is that AccuGas has signed a contract with Sahara. Sahara is a world-class company to sell up to 35 million scf a day of gas to their Afam power station. To put that into context, we currently have minimum contracted volumes of 141 million scf a day. So when that contract is called upon, that could increase our sales by up to 25% at any given time. So that's quite significant, one from the potential additional cash flows that we anticipate we'll generate from the contract. And secondly, from the fact it shows the direction of travel that the business is now in. I've consistently said that I expect us to sign many new gas contracts over the course of this year. And I certainly expect the CPF to be fully contracted by the end of the year, the CPF being our existing central production facility infrastructure. And this is really the first of several of such contracts that we expect to completely transform the cash flow generation outlook of the business. Which is already not insignificant. Our current existing contracts, for example, are expected to generate about $104 million of asset-level free cash flow this year. That's the sort of the crux of this morning. We signed a new contract. We said we were going to do it. We said we're going to sign more. We fully expect to sign more. And the contract is with a very good partner.
Yeah, what time period you signed this now? When does it start becoming material for you? When do you start generating this extra cash flow?
I think we would guide people to expect to start generating cash flow from Q2. So there's a lot of potential in that relationship going forward.
Yeah, yeah. And generally, you know, are you quite happy with how you're progressing here at Savannah then, Andrew?
Yeah, look, I think we've been very clear about the direction of travel, about what we're seeking to do in the business going forward. I think we're very clear internally what needs to be done to deliver the value going forward. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's full steam ahead on those work streams. So we know what we're doing and we're going to set about doing it, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just give us a brief overview of what do you hope to achieve in, say, the next 3, 6, 12 months?
In the context of the Nigerian business, mm-hmm. we have said that we will drill a well which will increase our production capacity further and also give us redundant production capacity. We've also said that we anticipate that we will increase our revenue base significantly through the addition of new gas sales agreements, which, as I've already said, this is one of several I'm expecting to sign over the course of the year. Mm-hmm. So that's the sort of the revenue side of the mm-hmm. Nigerian business. Mm-hmm. We're actively exploring ways to refinance the debt package that we have in the Nigerian business, which again we would anticipate we'd free up significant cash flow if that were to be completed. So that's, on the cost side of the Nigerian business. The other thing on the cost side of the Nigerian business, we continue to rationalise costs. We've already realised very significant cost savings across the business. But I think we continue to expect to be able to... You can assume that we will remain very focused on the cost side. So that's the sort of the base case business. What we've said is that there's... there will be a variety of opportunities that may or may not come our way throughout the course of the year on the liquid side. For example, through the Nigerian marginal field round, where you can get some relatively material assets are expected to be made available to local companies and their partners, of which we intend to be a partner in that process. So that's another significant potential opportunity in Nigeria. On the Niger side of the business, as we discussed before, we've made 5 oil discoveries in Niger. The focus around Niger will be bringing those discoveries into production and then recommencing exploration activity. And we can very clearly anticipate doing that. And we plan to do that in conjunction with a partner. And those are really the principal sort of sources of objectives and value creation that we expect to deliver throughout the course of this year. Mm-hmm. And what I would say is for those listeners that are not so familiar with Savannah, if they were to read my shareholder letter mm-hmm. from the last annual report, that really sets out a lot about the path we've gone down and the path that we're expecting to go through, and people will be able to tick off what's been done, what's not been done. Against that, as in what's not been done, which is, I guess, what is still to come. And then our Twitter account also has a lot of information on the business which maybe isn't picked up by the mainstream media, given the jurisdiction that we're operating in.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Andrew, as always, as you know, 3 reasons, if someone's listening, likes the sound of the progress you're making but are not yet following the story, give them those 3 quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Look, I think as a company, we combine a unique proposition of value and growth. So I think the first reason would be for any listener who wanted to do the work around the valuation, the value proposition of underlying business, I think that's a relatively clear thing. You can look at, for example, the published net asset value work that's been done by an independent competent person. You can look at the work that's been published by the financial community, the corporate broking community. Or you can look at, for example, the transaction we recently completed with private equity, whereby we sold interest in 2 of our 4 principal assets for a price that on a standalone basis is a very significant premium to our current market capitalization. So I think that value proposition is relatively clear. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the growth potential. So if you look at the Nigerian growth potential through the addition of new gas contracts, we said we're going to do it. We started that process of doing it, expect to see more. And then in Niger, it's a business model which has proven itself, right? I mean, we've proven we can operate, we've proven we can bang oil, we've proven that there's monetization routes with the infrastructure that's going in and the deal we did with the government in relation to the to access to local refinery. And that is a very repeatable business model. It's a dollar to find. We estimate it's an NPV of up to $6 a barrel, we estimate. And the cash flows are real because of the work that we've done associated with getting in with monetization again, which is a lot of information available in the public domain on. So to summarize, I think it's a combination of the value proposition and the very clear and transparent growth that we expect to be able to offer in both Nigeria and Niger.
Marvellous stuff. Andrew, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
I would expect very much so. Thank you so much.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Optibiotics Health, up 4% to 64 pence. At four, it is Two Shields Investments, that's TSI, flat today, 0.102 pence. At three, Union Jack Oil, that's UJO, flat at 0.152. At two, Europa Metals, EUZ. The most followed company today is Billing Services Group, up 60%. Bill is ticker there to 3.05 pence. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, we have Open Orphan. Sorry, it's Savannah Petroleum, addition of new customer to AccuGas. Of course, I chatted to Andrew on the podcast about that. At four, Open Orphan proposed placing to raise a minimum of 5 million. At three, it is European Metals Quarterly Activities Report. At two, Sylvania Platinum. That's second quarter results. And number one most liked RNS came from Europa Metals Drilling Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.